The longing for a past and a place is something you'll have heard us talk about before on Life Matters. We're a nation of immigrants, so it has a lot of resonance for many Australians. For Palestinians, this has a particularly bittersweet quality to it. And now Australian author Randa Abdel-Fattah has written a story about a young Palestinian girl who needs to go home. It's based, though, on her own heritage. Randa joins me now. Welcome back to Life Matters.
Thank you.
You're the author of, among other books, Does My Head Look Big in This? Remind us about your identity hyphens, as you call them, your own background.
Australian-born Muslim, Palestinian, Egyptian, chocoholic.
That does, I'm sure there's more you could add,
yes.
but it's pithy. It gets there. This book's called Where the Streets Had a Name. What's the significance there?
I guess with the title, I wanted to destroy the myth that Palestine was empty of inhabitants before the creation of Israel. I wanted to remind my readers that there was a living people there, a society, a community, and that the streets upon which people walk now in the state of Israel were Palestinian streets before, and that there is a memory of homeland that connects Palestinians to that land.
What happened to your family when the State of Israel was created?
My grandmother stayed and my grandparents stayed in Burqa, which is a village next to Nablus. And my father was born in 1945, so 3 years before. And what happened was that my grandfather immediately lost his job because he was a steamroller operator in Nazareth. So that became part of the borders of Israel. So he couldn't work there any longer. So money became very tight. My uncle then moved to Kuwait to try and get a job and send money back to my family. And my father followed him in 1962. And started high school there. So it had a huge sort of financial impact on my family because there was no more primary breadwinner, and my father and my uncle were forced to take on more responsibilities in supporting the family.
Your father and other family members of his generation were able to visit their village until the mid-60s, but the Six-Day War put an end to that.
That's right. So until 1967, they were able to go back to the village and spend, for example, Eid festivals there and the holy month of Ramadan and go back on school holidays. But in 1967, that opportunity, that border was closed to them. So my father did not return to his homeland until the year 2000 when he took us along with him. And he returned as an Australian on his Australian passport because, of course, he couldn't enter as a Palestinian.
There's an irony, or at least a paradox there.
Definitely. I mean, that it crushed him, the fact that he was able to walk the streets only because of this Australian passport, even though it was the country in which he was born in. And for us, it was truly a profoundly life-changing experience going back to my father's village and seeing where he was born and where he grew up, and also seeing the tremendous link that he had with his birthplace. It was something that I didn't truly appreciate until I saw him walking through the rooms of his house and trying to find his high school certificate that he hadn't seen in all those years and trying to go through the books of his childhood and showing me books he'd read in high school. You know, I had never appreciated that growing up in Australia with him, and you know, I'd always seen him as a Palestinian, but going back and seeing him in his homeland and the effect it had on him was really life-changing.
We've talked before on this show about the effect of, I suppose, second generation going back with their parents to the place their parents are from, and how it all always makes it more real, and it makes you understand them a bit better.
Definitely. My father, you know, he's always been very passionate about education, for example, and always pushed my sister and I to dream big and to be ambitious. And I think it's because he was a person who was dispossessed and displaced in the world. He was forced to make his way out, and Palestinians, really the only thing that they had that they could claim as their own was a good education, because it was the tool by which they could move to other countries successfully. So for me, going back and seeing why he had this, you know, why he was pushing us for education, well, it was very real to me going back there. And also seeing, you know, my father loves gardening. He loves creating, you know, a garden at home, and going back and seeing again his village life, and showing us the olive trees, and you know, he's got a fascinating memory, and he was able to remember the details of his childhood and little alleyways in the village that he could show us, and the olive groves. It all came back to me. It's sort of piecing together this man that I grew up with and who raised me.
You didn't get to meet his mother, your grandmother, until you were, what, 9 or 10?
That's right. We made a trip to Kuwait, and it was the first time we ever met my grandmother. She was still living in Burqa, in her village at that time. So we arrived in Kuwait first, and then she came a couple of days later, and there was a tremendous ceremony to welcome her. All the family, you know, came out in celebration, and you know, she was a lovely woman. Sort of a typical grandmotherly type, always wanting to feed us and hug us, and always concerned that we hadn't eaten enough. But I didn't really get a chance to talk with her until I visited Jordan in my first year of university. And my grandmother by that stage was living with my family in Jordan. They had brought her to Jordan because they couldn't return to look after her in Burqa, and she'd become so old and frail that they almost tricked her, really. They brought her on a holiday to Jordan, and then they refused to send her back because they were so worried that something would happen to her and there'd be no one to look after her. And I think she was very very bitter about that decision, but I suppose she understood it. But yeah, that was the first time I met her and spoke to her properly.
This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Richard Ady. My guest today is Randa Abdel Fattah, who's a young Palestinian Australian lawyer and writer. We were actually talking to her about her book, Where the Streets Had a Name. In the book, the young girl wants to gather a handful of soil from her grandmother's house in Jerusalem to bring to her as she's very ill, and she believes it'll revive her. But to make the journey, she has to negotiate her way through. It's only a short distance in terms of kilometres, but in fact it's quite a big adventure.
That's right. And that particular storyline, I was inspired by stories I'd heard growing up about Palestinians living in the West Bank wanting to return to their villages in what is now West Jerusalem and being unable to do so. And then having seen the effects of the checkpoint system and then the building of the separation wall, all of those posed even greater obstacles to them returning. So I was really fascinated by this sort of naive hope of a young girl, and again, the tremendous power that touching the soil of your homeland can yield on a person who is so connected with their birthplace and yet unable to live in it freely.
You tell the story, she goes to do this with her friend who has a talent for finding trouble. Trouble always finds them.
That's Sammy. I didn't want to write sort of misery literature. I didn't want this to be, a distortion on the Oslo Accords or a real, you know, sad tale about occupation. I wanted this to be a really funny, life-affirming book from a child's perspective, and to show that even in the most troubling times, you can still find humour. And I suppose humour is really the survival mechanism. And Sammy certainly presents a lot of humorous situations for Hayat because he is quite a rebel, and he, even in the face of an Israeli soldier at a checkpoint, he still manages to find the joke.
Well, we won't give it all away. Who is the book aimed at?
When I wrote it, I had a very wide audience in mind. It is primarily a young adult fiction, and I've always loved to write for young adults because I think that, especially with the book, the issues I've tackled in my books, I think they're unexplored in young adult literature, and I'm trying to introduce these really important themes to young people and stories that perhaps they haven't had a chance to be exposed to. But I think the issues it touches sort of transcends age.
You've been obviously to the region several times, and you're deeply conscious of your own origins there. What do you think the future holds for the region?
I hate to say that there are moments when I despair about what is happening, but then you hear little stories that touch your heart and make you realise that it's going to be more of those little stories that can bring about change in the region and hopefully a peaceful solution. I recently went to a play being shown at the Opera House. It's acted by a Palestinian actor but written by an Israeli Jew. So, you know, you see things like that and you think there is hope for peace so long as we have more communication and dialogue and less fanaticism on both sides.
And what about your own future? Because you're juggling motherhood, you're writing, you're working as a lawyer. You've got a lot on your plate.
Yeah, well, I've got an 11-week-old baby boy, so I'm not working as a lawyer at the moment. I've taken some time off, and I really love the writing, so I think I'll pursue the writing full-time for a while and then return to juggling law and writing.
Well, good luck with it, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
That's Randa Abdul-Fattah and her story, Where the Streets Had a Name. Unlike the U2 song, Where the Streets Had No Name, the book is Where the Streets Had a Name. It's published by Pan Macmillan Australia. Has Randa's story struck a chord with you? I'd love to hear your thoughts. As always, jump on the email or the guest book. You'll find both at abc.net.au/rn/lifematters.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.